Health Talk with Dr. Donna Kaplan, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Hale Iwa.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down, the milk trucks make their morning rounds.
And I also say the views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not represent those of KKCR, its board, its members, its DJs. Well, good afternoon, Dr. Donna Kaplan. How you doing today?
Good afternoon, Cousin Rich.
Nice to see you.
Really well. Great to see you.
And we welcome our guest who's been here before, Dr. Stephanie Seneff.
Good afternoon. So
how are you?
Very good.
And let's tell the audience where you're from again.
MIT. Yes, I'm a senior research scientist at MIT. I've been at MIT for my entire career, so love the place.
And you also live part-time here, right?
I do. I love Kauai. Kauai is such a beautiful island. It's
you and your
really
husband.
Special. Yes.
And he's also at MIT, isn't he?
He is.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy that you're here again today. You were with us on our last show 2 weeks ago. And today we have a very, very exciting show. And I wish we had 3 hours rather than 1 hour. So we're going to try to hold off on the phone calls till like 30 or 40 minutes into the show. And we'll signal when we can have callers call. And today we're going to be talking about heart disease, the myth of bad cholesterol, and issues with statin drugs. And Stephanie, I'm just so happy that you're able to be here with us, and you have just such a wealth of knowledge. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? You've been at MIT for a long time, and you have a very diverse background in different sciences.
That's true. Yes, I have an undergraduate degree in biology and a PhD in computer science, and most of my career I've been building computer dialogue systems to help people get access to information. Mm-hmm. And over the last 6 years or so, I've transitioned into doing this for biology and then also doing biology itself, so doing biology research, which mostly involves reading the literature and then synthesizing a story about what's really going on in biology that's quite different from what we're being told by the so-called experts.
Mm-hmm. And you also have your graduate and PhD in engineering?
Engineering and computer science, yes.
And computer science, yes, yes. And so now you're full on into biology research.
Yes, full time, yes.
Which
it's wonderful.
I'm so glad. I've been learning so much from you, and it's such important work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
And I think it's important to realize that if for people who don't understand this, that the medical system is really being given what the studies are from the pharmaceutical companies,
pharmaceuticals companies are driving the research in a very toxic way, I would say. It's really causing people to focus on the wrong solutions, and they're misunderstanding the problems and framing things incorrectly, and it's just been amazing to me to watch. I mean, fortunately, there's a lot of really good biology research that helps you to understand what's really going on, and then you just have to think about how that makes sense at a systems level and use computer science tools to help you organize all the material that you get and figure out the puzzle, because it's a giant puzzle.
And when we say that, you know, people are misinformed, but also doctors, because the doctors learn in medical school what is being researched by the pharmaceutical companies.
Absolutely, yes.
So today, why don't we start by talking about this great fear of cholesterol that we have in our world today?
It's really, I think it's insane. I mean, people have been taught to be so worried about their cholesterol levels, and they have to go in and get them measured, and if they're slightly high, they have to put them on a statin drug. I think it's a terrible thing that's happening right now in the world.
Yes, because cholesterol is so very important to the body.
It's really crazy. I mean, I've always said that cholesterol is to animals as chlorophyll is to plants. It's that mm-hmm. important. I think it's one of the most important molecules for proper functioning of the cells. Every cell in the body particularly the neurons. The brain has 25% of the body's cholesterol with only 2% of the body's mass. So the brain loves cholesterol.
25% of all the body's cholesterol
is in the brain.
Is in the brain, which is only 2% of the body mass.
Right.
That's pretty incredible.
It is. And you don't think that the body's putting that cholesterol in the brain in order to destroy the brain. You don't think that. I mean, it's absolutely clear it's causing the brain to work properly because of it.
Mm-hmm.
The synapses, the axons, everything depends upon the cholesterol to work properly.
Mm-hmm. And cholesterol is very important for just so many building blocks, right?
Yeah, and cholesterol is a precursor to incredible things like, you know, testosterone, estrogen, vitamin D. I mean, these are really, really important. Cortisol, that's right.
Vitamin D.
Very, very important molecules in the body. Mm-hmm. Are derived from cholesterol. So if you're not making cholesterol, you're not making them either. And we have a huge problem with vitamin D deficiency in this country right now, which is almost the same thing as cholesterol. When you look at the two molecules, it's hard to tell them apart.
And what are some of the, you know, problems with low cholesterol?
Oh, gosh. Where do I begin? I would say muscle problems. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the biggest thing is going to be problems with muscle, problems mm-hmm. with the brain, so memory problems, cognition problems, mm-hmm. muscle weakness, muscle pain. Then you get into problems with the digestive system. The digestive system needs cholesterol, and the pancreas needs cholesterol to make insulin. I mean, it's really so many. Of course, the liver is really stressed without cholesterol,
acids.
The bile acids mm-hmm. To digest the fats. I mean, there's a huge, endless list of things that depend. And then the adrenal glands, I mean, those are really in trouble if you don't have enough cholesterol to make the hormones mm-hmm. that they produce to help your body function properly.
Mm-hmm. And here we have the statin drugs that are just given to millions and millions of
right.
Americans.
Even children, which
and
really
Europeans.
Shocks me.
That is just shocking. And you've researched statin drugs pretty extensively,
haven't you? I certainly have.
And what have you found in terms of the side effects? Or
right.
do you want to talk about how they work first? What do you think would be
well,
would
of course,
be best?
I mean, I know. Maybe I'll start with the side effects, which mm-hmm. we learned the side effects through an interesting method. It involves computer science. We have papers on that. And you basically just collect a whole bunch of people's reports on their experiences with statin drugs. And you can get this on the web. They have all these, you know, a web post where people have chat rooms where they describe their experiences, and you can fill out. They fill out forms, and they have mm-hmm. they give their age, the drugs they're taking, the experience that they're having. You can grab all that material and run it through computer science techniques.
And that's what you did.
That's
you
what
evaluated.
We did. Uh-huh. Yeah, and you compare. So what you could do is get an age match distribution of two different sets of data, one of which is all statin drugs, and the other one is all the other drugs that people in that same age match distribution are taking. And you just compare word frequencies on words that show up in those two sets of data, and you find the words that show up unusually often in the statin drug component, and that tells you a likely correlation, a likely causal effect that statin could be causing a side effect that's represented by those words.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing what we found. I was so shocked because so many things, really serious problems.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had patients coming in with muscle pain and muscle weakness.
Yes, those things, all mm-hmm. the muscle pain, muscle weakness words are showing up with a probability of a likelihood of chance occurrence of 0.00000 several decimal points. In other words, it's almost impossible to believe that this distribution of words could have occurred by chance. And, of course, they also know that statins cause muscle weakness and pain. That's well acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Particularly in people who are in very good physical shape.
Mm-hmm.
They almost all of them have trouble taking a statin drug without having serious problems with their muscles.
Mm-hmm. What are some other more of the shorter-term effects of statin drugs?
Other side effects.
Side effects.
Yes. Memory problems, cognition problems, which is expected because cholesterol is so important to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Rhabdomyolysis is a very serious problem that can lead to kidney failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the muscles are getting destroyed by the statins. They release their proteins into the blood, and they get into the kidneys, and the kidneys can't cope with that, and they can just get destroyed by the
debris. And that
debris.
Has always been considered a very rare disease.
Right, but they're definitely correlated with statin drugs, and mm-hmm. I'm not the only one who says that.
So has there been an increase incidence, do you
there
think?
Certainly has, yes.
Uh-huh.
And then you have, I mean, a really scary one is ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh, it's awful.
That's a terrible disease. You mm-hmm. get diagnosed with that, and you will be crippled. You'll have paralysis of you won't be able to eat, you won't be able to talk, and you'll end up dying probably in 5 years
mm-hmm.
if you're diagnosed with ALS.
Wow.
It's a nervous system disorder.
Yes. And are there any benefits in cholesterol lowering drugs?
I cannot imagine what those benefits might be.
Uh-huh.
I think that it's clear that they do reduce the number of small heart attacks. Mm-hmm. And they're very careful to count even tiny heart attacks that you didn't even notice you had when they do this. They have ways to measure that, oh, you had a heart attack and you didn't even know you had it. And they count all these little heart attacks, and they can show that people who are on statins have fewer of them. Now, I think that's actually a problem, having fewer of those. It's just like if you kept putting out the fires in the forest, and finally you have a forest fire that burns down the whole state. So what happens, I think, is that the big heart attack comes along, and it's much more potent than it mm-hmm. would otherwise have been if you had had those smaller heart attacks earlier.
And have you seen that in the literature or in the side effects that are being reported?
Well, first of all, statins do not improve mortality. You know, they're improving your heart attack frequency, but mm-hmm. you're still dying, you know, so it's not like right. it's helping your mortality. And they definitely cause heart failure, and there's been papers on that. You look at the statistics of the of heart failure as a function of age, mm-hmm. looking at pre-statin era compared to post-statin era, and I've seen plots of this, and the heart failure rates are going up at all age groups above about maybe 40 or 50.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Because of the statins, and it's very clear to me why they would cause heart failure. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about that in various talks that I've presented.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up in our data as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, but I think let's just say that the definition of heart failure and cardiovascular disease are separate.
They're very, so, very different diseases, and people don't realize that.
Right.
They think the statins are protecting their heart, and what they're doing is doing something to the arteries in the heart in terms of reducing the amount of plaque. Or they don't even do that. Actually, they make the plaque worse because they calcify it, and calcified plaque is known to be a good predictor of heart attacks. So it's very interesting that they actually cause a feature in the plaque, which is called calcification. It's like becoming hardened arteries. Statins increase that, while at the same time preventing your heart from having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. They interfere with the process that produces the heart attack and make the plaque worse, sort of riskier.
Well, should we talk a little more about how statins are designed to work? And
Right. Well, they disrupt a particular enzyme. They interfere with its ability to function.
Right.
And that enzyme is affects a pathway, a very, very important pathway called the mevalinate pathway. Absolutely essential
and this is
to
in the
cell's
liver.
Function. Yes, in the liver. The liver produces cholesterol through this pathway, and it also produces a lot of other things besides cholesterol on that same pathway, and statins affect an early step, which means it not only affects cholesterol, but also a whole bunch of other things that are very, very important to the cell's proper function.
Let's talk about that.
Like coenzyme Q10, for example,
right.
which is essential to the functioning of the mitochondria, which are the energy factories.
So it's also blocking the coenzyme Q10, which
yes.
is very important for the heart and the skeletal muscles. Right?
And that's how you can get heart failure, because if coenzyme Q10 is not adequate, then the heart can't produce enough energy, and obviously the heart needs energy to be able to pump, so mm-hmm. that's very clear.
Okay, so let's just supplement the patient with coenzyme Q10.
Yeah,
I
think a lot of people do that, and I think that's a good thing to do
yes.
if you're going to take a statin drug. But, of course, that's not the only thing. There's also all these other more complicated things called dolichol and the RAS and RAF. There's these various molecules that are involved with cell-cell communication.
Mm-hmm.
The ability of the cell to send out signals to other cells, which is really important for the cells to be able to work as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And that is incredibly important for the heart attack or for the heart. When a muscle gets damaged and is about to die, mm-hmm. it sends out a signal that wants to usher in a macrophage to come in and clean up the mess. It also wants to sort of do you don't just push the power button to turn off your computer. You want to sort of allow it to shut itself down properly, and the cell wants to do that too. But it depends upon this macrophage showing up to help it do that and then to clean up the mess when it's done. And it can't do those signaling. Statins interfere with the molecules that are involved in that signaling mechanism. So the cell instead just falls apart, releases its debris into the tissues and then into the blood, and then that's what can cause things like rhabdomyolysis, but also can cause autoimmune diseases. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be a consequence of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cell isn't dying properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get the plaque is no longer as healthy as it was before, because the plaque involves, as you may know, oxidation damage. I mean, inflammation is a really important part of heart disease.
Yes.
Inflammation causes cells to die. And if they can't die properly, you're going to get a lot of debris in the plaque, which again is going to make the plaque unhealthy. So you have plaque that's both unhealthy in that sense and also calcified as a consequence of statins. So statins are directly messing up the plaque.
And they also cause a leakage of ions in the cell membrane, right? Cholesterol is very, very important in the cell membrane.
That's right.
Do you want to talk about that?
That's right. That's another thing. I mean, there's so many things you
could
talk about.
All of our cells.
Absolutely. Every single cell depends upon cholesterol to keep its membrane healthy, both to protect from ion leaks and to protect the fats in the cell membrane from damage, oxidation damage. So when you don't have enough cholesterol, then your fats, the cells' molecules are susceptible to being damaged by the inflammation that's causing the heart disease. So you're really in a bad state if there isn't enough cholesterol in the cell membrane. Mm-hmm. And the ion leaks is going to cause the cell to have to waste energy trying to pump those ions back across the membrane, which means it'll burn up all this energy, which it can't produce because it doesn't have coenzyme Q10. So it's a really bad scene on both sides.
So we hear a lot about the LDLs being bad cholesterol and the HDLs being good cholesterol and the low-density LDLs be even worse. Do you want to talk a little bit about that subject?
Yes. I mean, that's a long and detailed subject. Let me see if I can bring it to the high level to describe. But LDL, basically the liver produces VLDL, and that those are giant. These are big particles that are providing their carriers for not only cholesterol, but also fats and fat-soluble vitamins and various products that are very, very important to the cells. And the LDL particles are delivering all those things to the cells. So if you lower your LDL, you're going to prevent your cells from getting supplied with these important nutrients. As the LDL particle goes around and delivers things, it gets smaller because it's giving up its goods. Eventually, it becomes a small, dense LDL particle. And if it doesn't have enough cholesterol in its membrane, it's more susceptible to both oxidation damage and glycation damage from sugar. So if you have diabetes, and diabetes is also one of the things that statins cause.
Yes.
Diabetes means extra sugar in the blood. The sugar is going to wreck the LDL particle and make it unable to be taken up by the liver. So the particle gets stuck in the blood because it's damaged.
So just for general public, glycated, you know, damage from sugar, do you want to just mention about that?
Yes. I mean, sugar molecules are actually toxic in the blood, and that's why sugar, the body is important for the body to be able to pull that sugar out as quickly as possible. And of course, our diet works against that because we eat a lot of these heavily processed foods that are easily digested, and so the blood gets spiked with lots of sugar right after the meal and an overload of sugar, and that's part of what can lead to diabetes. Mm-hmm. But if your cells can't take the sugar in, then it's going to stick around in the blood and it's going to start damaging things by reacting with them and causing chemical changes to those molecules.
And the statin drugs also cause the desensitization of the receptors of the insulin, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is part of my research, and I've written papers on this, and this gets into this idea that we maybe could bring up now, which is, I don't know if this is a good time to bring up cholesterol sulfate, but cholesterol sulfate is a very interesting molecule that is cholesterol plus sulfate, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. And sulfate attached to cholesterol turns cholesterol into a different molecule, one which is actually water-soluble, and therefore it can travel in the blood without being packaged up inside a particle. And so this allows you to transport cholesterol in a way that doesn't involve these LDL particles, and you can then deliver that cholesterol to all the tissues. So I think cholesterol sulfate is a very, very important molecule to effectively lower your LDL by increasing your cholesterol sulfate as an alternative delivery platform.
Mm-hmm. And it causes negative ions in the blood, is that right?
It does, and the negative ions are incredibly important for the health of the blood. And all the red blood cells depend upon cholesterol sulfate in their membrane. This is well established, which provides a negative charge that surrounds the cell and therefore causes it to repel other red blood. You know, if you think of a magnet that you put the wrong way and they repel each other, it's the same idea that these two negatively charged particles, which are two red blood cells, will not stick together because they have that negative charge around them due to the cholesterol sulfate that's in their membrane. Mm-hmm. So without it, the red blood cells will tend to bunch together, and that can cause things like blood clots. Which the platelets will also do the same thing. The platelets also have cholesterol sulfate in their membranes, and it also protects them from coagulating.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk more about that and your theory that you've come up with about collaborative vascular disease and plaque in a little while. And let's first address fructose.
Yes, fructose, right. Fructose is a sugar, just like glucose, only it's a much worse sugar than glucose.
It has, and we have so much in our diet, the
especially high fructose corn syrup, which, right, I will say is, I think, doubly bad, not just because it's fructose, but also because I suspect, and I haven't proven this, that it contains glyphosate. That's because it comes from corn, GMO corn, which is like 90% of the corn that's grown is GMO Roundup Ready, which means Roundup is glyphosate, and we talked about that before.
Yes, on our last show.
Yes, and glyphosate in the sugar would cause additional damage. So, but the fructose itself is also bad.
Right, and the liver has to process fructose more than it needs to in the breakdown of sucrose. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Because fructose doesn't, it's interesting, because glucose, which is in regular cane sugar, well, actually, fructose is in both cane sugar and high fructose corn syrup, but there's more of it in high fructose corn syrup. But the other one, sucrose, and glucose, it doesn't require, it has the insulin-dependent mechanism to absorb, which it doesn't work for fructose. So typically the liver wants to grab all the fructose out of the blood as it comes to it. That's the first station when things are released from the gut into the blood. It goes first to the liver. The liver grabs the fructose out and furiously wants to process it and turn it into fat. And then send it out as LDL particles. So ironically, eating fructose is going to encourage a rise in LDL in LDL, and that's been shown in animal experiments.
And what happens if the person is on statin drugs?
Well, then the liver has a hard time doing this, because in order to be able to save fat, in order to package up fat and send it out, it has to have cholesterol. Fat cannot be shipped without cholesterol because it protects the fats from damage. Again, I mentioned the oxidation damage and the glycation damage. The liver won't even take the fructose in if it can't produce enough cholesterol to mix with the fats that it knows it's going to, in a sense, knows it has to produce from the fructose. So it will let the fructose stay in the blood rather than taking it in, because it can't process it.
And that wreaks havoc.
It's terrible, because then the muscles are stuck with processing the fructose. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, then they are dealing, they take the fructose in, they produce lactate. Lactate is actually a wonderful fuel for the heart, and the heart loves it, and the heart gets first dibs on the lactate. So that exercising, that might be a reason why exercising is good for you, because the muscle cells will produce lactate for the heart, which is a
That's anaerobic exercise, right?
Yes, right. Anaerobic exercise, and that's what's causing the fructose to lactate conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And those muscles that are anaerobic are preferentially damaged by statins compared to the other muscles, cells.
And how about aerobic skeletal muscle exercise? Is that going to process the fructose, or it can't do that?
Well, the aerobic muscles can do it, but the muscles have a degree of balance between aerobic and anaerobic, and the ones that are anaerobic do more anaerobic processing. So the aerobic muscles are going to have to use oxygen to process, which is going to be damaging, because the fructose is so the glycating energy plus the fructose and the oxygen are going to be really damaging to the cell if it has both of them present at the same time. So it wants to process it through the anaerobic muscles preferentially, muscle cells. That was a little bit confusing, but sorry about that.
Is there more you can say about the effect of statins on skeletal muscle?
So I think this is a reason why statins cause a lot of muscle damage, is because the muscles are stuck having to process this fructose that the liver can no longer handle. And this means that they're exposed to a lot of fructose. And fructose is 10 times as glycating. It has 10 times the effect of glucose in damaging, in this glycation problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they're much
damaging,
more damaging to the muscles. So the muscles get destroyed by the fructose. And then having gotten destroyed, they can't send out those signals, because the statins are interfering with that as well. So they die, and they release their debris into the tissues, and it gets into the blood, and then it causes things like rhabdomyolysis and kidney failure, as well as, of course, muscle pain and weakness and all of that.
Yeah, I don't think people realize, you know, that are on statin drugs, just how detrimental it is.
I know. I mean, it's amazing to me how successful the industry has been at keeping that under wraps, the damages that statins do. It's quite insidious, because when I look at the side effects of statins, I would characterize it as basically making you grow older faster, all the things that are associated with old age in terms of being feeble, having mental problems.
Feeble, yeah.
Yeah, mental frailty.
Muscle weakness. Mental frailty, wow.
These are all symptoms of old age. And, of course, they also cause things like hair loss, hearing loss, cataracts. These are also characteristic of aging. So they're basically making you age faster than you would otherwise age. And a person who's on statins hasn't had a chance to know what aging is like. They think this is, I'm supposed to be aging like this. They don't realize that they're experiencing accelerated aging.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think that that's a consequence of the drug rather than just being a natural process.
Well, I'm so glad that you're talking to us about this. This is so important because, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, doctors and the public think that statins are really important if you have high cholesterol.
I know.
And the definition is anything over 200.
It's crazy.
That's actually not high
in my
consideration.
Well, and in fact, when you look at the data on things like all-cause mortality for women, the higher the cholesterol, the lower the all-cause mortality. It's an exact reverse relationship. For men, it sort of has a much sharper, higher mortality at the lowest cholesterol for both men and women, the highest mortality with the lowest cholesterol. People don't realize this. But for men, there's a bit of an uptake at extremely high cholesterol levels as well that you don't see in women. So for women, high cholesterol is good news from the standpoint of all-cause mortality.
I've been talking to my patients for, you know, I talk to them about, you know, how bad statin drugs are, and I find that that's the one that they're really afraid to give up. They're really afraid because there's just such a fear about cholesterol.
I know, it's amazing, and the doctors will instill that fear in you. They'll tell you that they're so sure that you have to take this drug and that your cholesterol is like a time bomb, and, you know, the doctors have been persuaded by the industry that this is the case. It's a wonderful moneymaker for the industry.
And it is a little past 12:30, and you are listening to Health Talk with Dr. Donna Kaplan and our guest star.
She is. She's our star.
I was just on a theater event all weekend, so I'm still in the mode of acting.
Thank you, Cousin Rich.
Yes, Dr. Stephanie Senna from MIT. Yes, we're talking about heart disease.
Yes, this myth that cholesterol is bad for us, in reality, we really need it, and we need it in our diet.
Absolutely.
And I'm just thinking about I've done work in different remote areas like Honduras and also in eastern Tibet. And I remember working with, in Honduras, working with this woman who had progressive cervical cancer. And just an aside, no woman should be dying of cervical cancer because it's such a slow-growing cancer that we're able to diagnose with Pap smears, and that's really important. And then last week we were talking about Gardasil,
which is
the vaccination, which is likely causing more incidences of cervical cancer.
It's causing cervical cancer in young people who never get cervical cancer.
Right.
It's amazing.
And many detrimental effects. But here's this woman way up in the mountains. She basically, you know, didn't have energy to go into town. She didn't have any money, but they had chickens with eggs that were laying lots of eggs. And she and I was really trying to encourage her to eat more protein.
Yes.
And here was the perfect source that they had for free.
Yes.
And she was afraid to eat the egg.
Because of cholesterol?
Yes.
She even knew about the cholesterol?
She was absolutely afraid. I know. So here's...
Eggs are a fantastic food because they're quite inexpensive. And especially, of course, it has to be healthy chickens. As we have here running wild in Kauai, they would probably produce very healthy eggs because of the outdoor experience.
We have a listener who wants to ask a question.
All right.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh, Kidoka. I just was listening to the description of fructose and it being very bad and so on. I eat lots of fruit, and I know it has fructose. I feel pretty good. Can you tell me why fructose is so bad?
Yes. Now, that's a good question. And in fact, fruit is probably a healthy food. I mean, if you're not taking statin drugs. And because the fruit has not just the fructose, but all the different other things that are in the fruit that allow you to process the fructose well. And one of the important things in fruit is the antioxidants, you know, the flavonoids, that allow actually you to, that help you to help the liver to process the fructose properly and produce cholesterol, fats and cholesterol that can be delivered to the cells. Fat is a very, very useful fuel for the cells. And so fructose is in a sense fat, and therefore it's not bad for you. But when you combine it, when you combine it with statin drugs, such that the liver can no longer process it, then it becomes dangerous.
I see. So it's in combination with some sort of pharmaceutical that it isn't.
Combination of high fructose corn syrup, which doesn't have all those other things with it, the vitamin C as well. I mean, all these things are helping you to process the fructose correctly. But when you have the high fructose corn syrup, it's just pure sugar. It doesn't have any of those other nutrients with it.
Yeah,
so
it took
the fruit,
all the fruit properties out of the thing.
Exactly. And it's really neat, actually, that foods always come naturally with the proper balance of all the other things that are needed to help you process their fuels properly.
Right, like eggs have lecithin.
Yeah, eggs have a wonderful set of micronutrients that help you to process what's in them effectively. So just eating whole foods.
I'll carry on eating fruit then.
Fruit's okay, yes. Fruit is great here, actually.
And I would say that even with fructose, if you're having it all the time without enough protein or beneficial fats, then you know you can get burnout of your insulin receptors.
Right, you can overdose on fruit.
For sure, and so it's important to balance the blood sugar by having beneficial fats and proteins throughout the day in your diet, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. No, I am a great believer in fats. I eat a high fat diet,
and
I've never, for example,
would be a good thing to eat together.
Excuse me.
Fruits and nuts would be a good
absolutely
thing to eat together.
That would be a great combination. Absolutely
protein,
great.
All that?
Yes, because nuts and seeds give good protein and good beneficial fats.
Yeah.
Fresh seeds and nuts. Excellent. Great
Thank
idea.
Thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I sure appreciate the free advice.
Thank you.
you mentioned about with the statin drugs and the muscles and the anaerobic effect of using the fructose creates lactate,
mm-hmm.
and the heart likes lactate.
Yes.
So is there a long-term issue with that?
Well, I mean, if the muscles get wrecked, they can no longer do that.
Right.
And then at that point, I think that's when the heart failure is going to start to set in because there's no longer an adequate supply of lactate from the muscles.
And when we had our meeting, you were mentioning we talked about exercise and statins and how detrimental that
that's
is.
That's a very dangerous combination. And, of course, they tell you, oh, you have heart disease, you need to get on the statin drug and you need to start exercising. And that combination is really dangerous. And, in fact, it's been shown that people who exercise do get benefit from the exercise, and they had a study that was able to measure that. But they looked at the people who were on statins versus the ones that weren't, and the ones on statins did not get any benefit from the exercise, from this measure.
Right. They didn't get any benefit from the exercise, and what you're saying is that it's exercise
damaging.
Is damaging.
Right, damaging
to
the
muscles,
and they could end up, you know, basically paralyzed.
Wow. Well, let's talk about...
We have some calls. You want to take calls, or... Because people are calling.
I think what I would like to do so that we get it in is first start talking a little more about, Dr. Stephanie, your theory of cardiovascular disease and plaque.
Yes.
And then we'll integrate some of the calls.
Yes, I'll try to get this out briefly because this is important, I think. And I mentioned cholesterol sulfate, which is synthesized in the skin as a response to sunlight exposure. So that's another problem that we have in our society.
We're afraid of sun.
We're afraid of sun.
And we're afraid of cholesterol.
That's right. And that's a really, really bad combination because we mess up the production of cholesterol sulfate.
Isn't that
which,
amazing?
Yes, it's just terrible. And so sunlight is really, really healthy. It's crazy that you would think that biology would develop in the presence of this wonderful energy source and not use it. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
So sunlight with the skin and
produces,
cholesterol.
Right, produces cholesterol sulfate.
What else does it do? What's your theory?
What else does what do? The sunlight.
The sunlight.
Well,
the
it
skin.
Produces vitamin D and it produces
right.
cholesterol sulfate, but I think
right.
the cholesterol sulfate may be more important than the vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, sunny places have a much lower risk of heart disease than places further north or that don't have as much sun. There's
mm-hmm.
a very good correlation between more sun exposure and reduced incidence of heart disease.
Is it dramatic?
Yes, it's quite dramatic. It's a very nice inverse linear relationship
mm-hmm.
with sun and heart disease. My theory about the plaque that I'm that I've written paper, a paper about, I have a paper on that, is that the purpose of plaque actually has a purpose. You wouldn't think, you know, you wouldn't think that if your body had excess stuff that it needed to get rid of, that it would just pile it into the
arteries
that are supplying the most important organ of the body. That makes no sense whatsoever. If you're going to put it somewhere, that's the wrong place to put it. So you've got to be putting it there for a very important reason. And the reason why it is the heart arteries that get clogged with, they talk about clogging the pipes, these fatty deposits, is because they're performing a very useful service. And my analysis of the literature has led me to conclude that this service is that they are producing cholesterol sulfate. So it's very, very interesting that because you're not getting enough from the sun exposure in the skin, then the arteries that are supplying the heart have to take on the task of producing cholesterol sulfate for the heart. And mm-hmm. that's the purpose of the plaque. And when you look at what's going on there, it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's a lot of detail. I'm not sure I need to go into that at this point. But basically, the macrophages take up the cholesterol from the LDL, and they save it. They save it in fat deposits. And then when there's an opportunity to make sulfate from homocysteine, which involves inflammation, you need the inflammation to make the sulfate from the homocysteine. That's why you, and then you can have, run the risk of inflammatory damage. You could avoid that by getting sunlight exposure to the skin. So the inflammation can damage the artery wall, and that's a problem. But you have to have the inflammation to make the sulfate, and you desperately need the sulfate. So it all gets back to a deficiency in sulfate that's preventing you from being able to supply cholesterol sulfate to the heart. So it piles up in those arteries waiting for an opportunity to become cholesterol sulfate.
Anything else you can say about how plaque forms? And why? I mean, you've been touching on
this. Yeah, I mean, another thing that people don't realize is that the plaque is actually not the problem. The experts mm-hmm. are really starting to admit this now, that the real problem is thrombosis. Mm-hmm. And even the place where you think the artery is really
blood
blocked.
Blood clots, right?
Yeah, blood clots. Right. Blood clots are the real problem. They talk about unstable plaque. Mm-hmm. And often the unstable plaque is actually not the place where the artery is really clogged. The body actually has a really good mechanism. First of all, these fatty deposits often kind of build outside and they still keep the artery open. And also, if the artery does get too blocked, there's mechanisms to build bypass arteries, natural bypass arteries. So the heart is able to kind of manage this problem, keeping these factories in place that are making this cholesterol sulfate and readjusting the vascular supply, the blood vessel supply to the heart to accommodate these fatty deposits that need to be there in order to be able to provide the cholesterol sulfate to the heart.
That's just so interesting how that fits in the puzzle.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was very fascinating to me to read and to find that this was in fact the case. I have all the papers that discuss each of these steps that are involved in the heart disease that makes it very clear that what it's doing is making cholesterol sulfate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Should we take a call?
Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hello. Yes,
Aloha.
You're on the air.
Aloha. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Earth Balance, but...
Earth Balance, the...
buttery spread.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it claims on there that it's naturally free of hydrogenated oils, has 0 grams of trans fat, and supports healthy cholesterol. So I'm wondering your take on Earth Balance and heart health.
Well, I know the ingredients have changed, and when it first came out, it had canola oil, and canola oil is actually really toxic to humans. It's not a great oil. But do you know what's in it currently? Are they maybe putting flax oil in it now?
No, this one still says palm fruit, soybean, canola, and olive oil.
That sounds terrible to me because it's going to be probably GMO soy and GMO
right.
canola, and that's going to be glyphosate.
This is organic, called the oil.
Oh, if it's organic, it's better, much better.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But still, I don't recommend canola oil. I actually think that saturated fats are the healthiest fats. And this is the opposite, again, of what they tell you. They see that the saturated fats...
Well, palm kernel oil is a saturated fat.
That would be a good one, yes.
Right.
Palm kernel oil would mm-hmm. be good. I have never used canola oil in my life.
So is it true about the hydrogenated oil, so they're not good for you?
Yes. The hydrogenated oil, they that has the The trans fatty acid, the molecule is actually bends from a cis to a trans, and
trans fats are really bad. They actually pretend to be saturated and they're not, and then the body makes a mistake and uses it, because saturated fats cannot be oxidized. That makes them really great fats, whereas the trans fats look like saturated, but they're not. And so the body will take them into, for example, the plaque and do a really bad thing because they'll be damaged by oxidation damage.
We've discussed on this show the benefits of butter versus Earth Balance or Smart Balance.
Butter is really
good. And coconut oil.
Coconut oil, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
We have another caller.
Okay. So we have another
caller.
Hello,
are you on the air?
Yes. Okay. Hello, doctors.
Yes, and we have a lot of calls, so please make this very brief. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Cousin Rich. I just got through reading what your doctor may not have told you about heart disease by Dr. Mark Houston. Do you have any comments regarding this gentleman's contribution?
I'm personally not familiar with him. Are you, Dr. Stephanie?
I haven't heard of him, no.
Well, he would be very consistent with what you're saying. But I have a specific question regarding the role of sugar or actually fructose. What do you recommend for diabetes 2 patients in terms of a acceptable sweetener?
Oh, gosh.
Stevia, okay?
I mean, I would say try to avoid sugar if possible.
Stevia
should be fine.
About blackstrap molasses?
That would be good, probably, right? Wouldn't you say?
Blackstrap molasses for diabetes?
As a sweetener. If you need to use a sweetener, what should you use?
Right. And so basically, when your body takes in the whatever form of sugar, it's converted into a triglyceride?
Well, in my opinion, if you're susceptible to having diabetes and you're having some desensitivity of your insulin receptors, then it's really best to avoid carbohydrates and sugars as much as possible, and focus on beneficial fats and vegetables and proteins. That's my opinion.
I completely agree with that. I think he's asking if you really, really need to sweeten something.
I would use stevia.
Yeah, I've been using the stevia. I just wanted to
I personally
say,
don't
thank
like
so
the
much.
Taste of it, but thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Right on. Thank you.
Okay, well, this is really fascinating about cholesterol sulfate and the role of sulfate in the body. And do you want to talk about more about the role of sulfate in the body and what you've found in your research?
Well, one thing interesting I should mention is that there are two islands off the coast of Greece, one called Koptos and one called Crete, and they have a similar climate and a similar diet in these two islands, similar lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has much more heart disease than the other.
Oh, interesting.
And one of them is in the middle of the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, on top of the ridge crest. And the other one is in the north, and it's on top. So the ridge crest is basalt rock, and the one in the north is on top of a limestone plateau, so that's carbonate. And so the basalt rock has a lot of sulfur, and the carbonate does not. It has a lot of carbonate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the sulfur in the water, even the water supply, but certainly in the soil that would grow the vegetables that they would eat, they're getting much more sulfur, and I think that's what's protecting them from heart disease. And
that's very interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that. Like for example, Iceland, which also has a lot of basalt and also has low heart disease and a long longevity. Healthy people are healthy in Iceland, I think, is also because of the sulfur. So sulfur is really, really vital for health. And glyphosate is the thing I think that you might be driving at. I think glyphosate is a key factor in many, many problems. I mean, basically all the different health issues that we're seeing today. And I've got a paper on that I wrote with Anthony Samsel. And I think we probably mentioned that last time. So one of the things I think glyphosate does is it contributes to heart disease. And it does so because of its interference with sulfur and with sulfate transport and sulfate synthesis.
And glyphosate is the main ingredient in Roundup Ready herbicide.
In Roundup, yes, in the herbicide, that's right, that Roundup Ready protects you from.
Mm. We have some more calls when you're ready.
Okay, we're almost ready. Let's just finish talking about glyphosate because here we have probably our most important health issue. On our island of Kauai, our precious, precious island, our beautiful island, and we have all these GMO companies, five or so companies that are doing big business, developing their seeds and their pesticides on our island, and they're using just so much pesticides.
Yes, they are, and they're using all of these restricted use pesticides that are talked about a lot, but they're also using a great deal more glyphosate than they are the restricted use pesticides.
Yes.
The sum of all the restricted use pesticides, I think, is only one quarter or one fifth mm-hmm. as much as the total glyphosate.
And they're using it all in combination.
Yes.
And we're seeing so many health effects, especially on the west side,
yes.
where these companies are mostly occupying, but they're also in the Lihue area. And you're going to be talking tomorrow
mm-hmm.
on another radio show. You're frequent.
I'm enjoying this opportunity.
You're going to be on Out of the Box tomorrow, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some folks that have been affected by the children.
It should be interesting.
Parents
looking forward
of children
to being able to
affected.
Talk about that. That's
yeah.
right. Yes.
So we're seeing short-term effects of asthma and long-term effects of cancer.
Right.
Birth defects, high rate of miscarriages. All this has been going on in Argentina. They've been having just huge, vast areas of Argentina growing the GMO corn. So we've seen the glyphosate issues there, and
yes.
they're just awful. They're just extremely detrimental. They're getting into our water supply. They're getting into our oceans. They're affecting the people. They're affecting the wildlife. They're affecting the fish. More than we could ever understand, because,
absolutely.
You know, they haven't even studied these pesticides, let alone in the combinations.
And
right?
again, I might say that the glyphosate is very much like the statin drugs, because the effect is insidious, and you don't, you know, you take a poison, you get a really bad upset stomach, you start throwing up, you know, you get a huge headache. I mean, you have some kind of very obvious symptoms. Glyphosate is subtle, because you don't notice that you're getting poisoned when you take it. And it's just slowly eroding your health, because it messes up your ability to deliver the sulfate to all the tissues. And eventually something gives. You know, something is so depleted in sulfate that something awful has to happen.
Well, one of the things that we didn't mention, there are a couple of articles on the very much increased risk of breast cancer and prostate
yes.
cancer with cholesterol.
Oh, that's
drugs.
Right. That's a
with
very interesting
drugs.
Topic, because I
yes.
have done the research on both of those cancers, and it's quite fascinating that breast cancer actually is looking at the plaque and how it produces cholesterol sulfate. Breast cancer produces estrone sulfate, and estrone is a derivative of estrogen, which is a derivative of cholesterol. So it's another sterol sulfate, very much like cholesterol sulfate, and can probably, almost certainly, transport sulfate as a substitute for cholesterol sulfate. So the cancer is actually doing something good for you in producing that estrone sulfate.
So do you see this as maybe the body attempting to create more sulfate?
Yeah, absolutely the case.
Sulfate?
I think postmenopausal, it's a vestigial organ. So mm-hmm. it's actually a great place to do something like that. And in fact, they're increasingly advising people not to treat. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that. Both prostate cancer and breast
mm-hmm.
cancer,
uh-huh.
they have this kind of watchful waiting algorithm that they've been trying to talk about lately, that don't actually treat the cancer. Just watch it. And for both prostate and breast, prostate cancer produces directly cholesterol sulfate. That's actually a measure of prostate cancer, to see that it's producing cholesterol sulfate. So it's very, very interesting to me that
very
these cancers are able to compensate. They're actually able to correct for these problems that would otherwise be catastrophic if the cancer wasn't there.
Right. And there are a couple of, there's a new cholesterol-lowering drug, the PCSK9.
Right.
You want to just briefly mention
that? And I did want to mention, by the way, statins are also associated with both prostate cancer and breast cancer. There's been recent evidence of that.
Right, that's what I was seeing.
Yes, both statin drugs, yes, and also, I think, glyphosate. And we wrote about glyphosate's connection with breast cancer as well. So both of them are causing these cancers because of their interference.
Oh, and leukemia and other bloodborne cancers.
Right.
And lymphomas. And
that's right, lymphomas, definitely.
Yes.
I've been researching the connection between glyphosate and lymphoma.
Mm-hmm. So there's the bill 2491.
Yes.
That's very important to speak out for that bill. To begin to protect our island and our people and all of the wildlife.
And you were starting to, I was supposed to answer something and I've forgotten what it was.
Oh, the PCSK9 is another cholesterol-lowering drug.
Oh, yes, that one's extremely
out.
Interesting. PCSK9 is actually a molecule that plays a very important regulatory role in the liver. It actually prevents the liver from taking in cholesterol, taking back the LDL particles, if it's hanging out, if the liver can take up sulfate, it will inactivate PCSK9. So PCSK9 prevents the liver from taking back the LDL, which is so that if you interfere with PCSK9, then the liver will take the LDL back and the LDL will go down. So it has the effect, the drug interferes with PCSK9. It disables it.
Mm-hmm.
But sulfate also disables it. Sulfate disables it in a way that says we've got sulfate, therefore the liver can take in this cholesterol, because the liver needs the sulfate in order to be able to take in the LDL particle. So it's intimately connected to sulfate deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
The way to
mm-hmm.
solve the problem much better is to provide it with sulfate. But instead they give it some toxic drug that's going to disrupt its ability to function, which is going to allow the liver to take in the LDL particle even though it can't process it. So the liver will probably have toxic reaction to these drugs, I would predict.
Okay. We've run out of time, unfortunately.
I knew we needed 3 hours.
So can you give out your information where people can read about your papers and
yes,
et cetera?
And I have a lot of stuff. There's a lot of interviews with Mercola and other people that you can find on the web. And my webpage is people.csail.mit.edu/senef.
All right.
I have some things posted there.
And someone asked a quick question about polyphema, something, too many red blood cells in the body.
Ah.
And is there a correlation? Yes.
Polycythemia. Is there a correlation? That's a good question. Anyways, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
For
I enjoyed
being
it.
On the show.
Thanks.
And can't wait for you to be back on the show. And I'm going to listen in tomorrow. That seems like a very important show with Felicia out of the box. And thank you, Cousin Rich.
You got it. And up next, One World Radio with Richard. So.
And any questions for me, I'm at 828.
Sorry, say that again.
Any questions for me? I'm at 828-6153.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you,
doctors.
Thank you,
both
much.
Of you.
Bye-bye. Aloha.